Hello, makers. Welcome to Making Conversation, a podcast where we chat all about making, the app, and the act. I'm Jen, head of marketing here at Making. And today we're going to be listening to an interview that Ashley did with Sabreen Mohammed. I've had the pleasure of meeting Sabreen at one of our Seattle meetups. Sabreen is the founder of Novaloom. Novaloom is a startup just like the Making app, but it teaches you how to hand sew via a special technology of sew by numbers. We'll jump into that chat in a sec, but first, of course, I need to give a little love to a few of the people in the Making app, as we do here on this podcast. Let's start out with Kira, who has been adding some beautiful art to the Making app feed. The shapes and colors that they use are just so lovely and inspiring. They also knit. Their username is CIARABARSOTTIART. Oriana has been one of the members of the Making app since the beginning and a super important part of our community. Their handle on the Making app is Lunar Fiber Arts, LunarFiberArts. Their shop currently consists of embroidery and knit patterns. The other day I was looking through our marketplace to see if I could find a pattern to knit some socks, and the Elverita socks jumped out at me. They look like they're going to be so much fun to knit. I also wanted to shout out Jen at Happy Scrappy. The weaving journey that you're going on has been so inspirational. The colors that you have been utilizing in this last weave and all of the updates that you've been posting have just made me so happy. So thank you so much for being a part of this community. If you see something amazing that inspires you in the Making app and you'd like for us to give a shout out on an upcoming episode from you, send us a note at hq@makingco.com. Speaking of community, I think that our community has stepped up in a big way, and we can continue to do so. Lola Bean Yarn Co. has been such an important part of our industry as a whole. Adela has given so much to all of us. Not only her amazing talent for creating beauty in her product, but also support, so much love, and straight up laughter till your cheeks hurt. Our friends over at Magpie Fibers put together a GoFundMe. Let's all give back to Adela and make the next stage of Lola Bean Yarn Co. a reality. We'll drop the GoFundMe link in the notes for this episode. And even if you can't donate at this time, definitely share with your crafty networks. Thank you again to Magpie Fibers for setting this up. And we love you, Adela. We can't wait to see where this takes you. A few weeks ago, we sent out a survey to our app community to get some feedback. Y'all delivered, and we have some great actionable items to move forward with. I wanted to go over a few things to help answer some questions and clear up a few confusions. All responses to the survey were anonymous, but super helpful to take us to where we need to go with upcoming bug fixes and feature additions. One of the comments that we received in the survey that I wanted to address first was, quote unquote, "Stop with the woke stuff." Now, I wanted to speak to this because we do constantly talk about our values. Everything that we do is built on those values and has been from the very beginning. They're just so important to us. So with that, of course, comes talking about human rights and how we can all support each other. Our community is beautifully diverse, lovely, talented, and passionate, and everything that we do and build is focused on uplifting that community. So as the saying goes, there's an ass for every seat, but you're more than welcome to find a place to sit that aligns with where you stand. People have come to join the Making app because our values align with theirs. And sure, we're not for everyone. However, if you're looking for a new space and a community full of love and acceptance and built on values that are inclusive and supportive, we hope that you'll join us in the Making app. Why is the feed only knitting? So this was a great question because we do have a lot of fiber arts in the feed. The Making app started as Making Magazine, which was heavily fiber arts focused. So of course, when we built the app, we invited that community to join us first. However, I do want to talk about how beautifully diverse and craft the app has become. The other day, after I had read this in the survey, I opened the app and started scrolling. And of course, there was crochet and knitting, but we also had leatherwork, weaving, painting, and digital art, sewing, and repurposing. And there's so much more to it than just knitting now. So if you've opened up the app and haven't felt like your craft has been represented, first of all, we highly encourage you to post to the feed to help add to that content. But also open up the app now and scroll. I think that you will be very happy. How can I log bugs? This is an amazing question. We appreciate this more than you will ever know. First, make sure you have the latest app update. If you would like to report something that you feel is a bug or anything else that you feel could add to the experience, send screenshots, screen recordings, and what kind of phone you're on, and any other details to hq@makingco.com, and we will make sure to log that bug. So we had a few people ask why they have to join a subscription or why is the app so expensive? The Making app is totally free. We actually don't even list ads, but the best way that you can support what we are building is by joining Bright Collective. Bright Collective is our monthly community membership experience delivered right to your inbox and the Making app every month. Members will receive monthly e-zines, including curated craft patterns, essays, recipes, member discounts, special community events, and more. Becoming a Bright Collective member is the best way to support this podcast and what we are building at Making. So head to makingzine.com to check out the options. We have a yearly membership that equals $10 a month, and we also have a monthly membership that's $12 a month. So if you're thinking about dipping your toe in and testing it out, that's a great way to go. There were three top things that people asked for in this survey. Number one was sharing. So being able to share your profile, your shop in the marketplace, etc., that is coming. Right now, the marketplace is in beta. And what that means is makers can sell their PDF patterns, books, etc. They are also able to teach classes and list services. So in the next iteration of the marketplace, once we move out of beta, you'll be able to sell your finished goods and supplies, etc. Groups is also something that's coming. It might not be called groups. However, that is a really good way to describe it before the product is finalized. Essentially, you'll be able to create a group of anything you're thinking of. So you could create a group for Seattle, Washington. You could create a group for people who like to travel. You could create a group of our favorite food is a bean and cheese burrito. And then everybody will be able to search for the different groups in the app and join. A few people mentioned not being able to zoom in on photos. Oh, but you can. Make sure you have the latest update of the app. Tap on a photo in the feed and then tap on it again within the post and you'll be able to zoom in and get better detail on the craft that you are looking at. Our community is the most important thing to us. So how can we be better? Is there anything that we can do to create a better experience for you in the Making app? Send us a note at hq@makingco.com. All right, it's time to pass it over to Ashley and Sabrine.
I want you to take me back to the beginning. And by beginning, I mean most people's creative journey starts somewhere really early, often in childhood, from a location or an experience or even a person. And it doesn't always have to do with what they're doing today.
So it's difficult for me to pinpoint exactly where that seed was planted just because it started so early and I did so many different types of creative activities starting from the very beginning. So I had to kind of ask my parents about this a little bit. One thing that I was really into when I was little was just playing with Legos. My grandpa was a retired civil engineer and we used to just spend our days building things with Legos. I do remember enjoying the building process, but then after a while, like a critical proportion of those Legos would be built and I hated pulling them apart and having to clean up. So I loved the building, didn't like the taking apart and cleaning up. I do remember being particularly into painting. So nobody in my house was particularly creative or artistic. I think I picked it up just through activities in schools. And my parents say that I had a natural inclination towards it and would ask to be enrolled in these after school art programs. So I was more into 2D art, sketching, painting from earlier than I can really remember, before first grade. With respect to crafting, that one was interesting. So my mom was not a particularly crafty or artistic person, but she got married when she was 19 and she came to the United States and had me like a year later. And she came from India and struggled with some of this seasonal gloominess in Seattle and just like a sense of loneliness from just being away from her large family and having to adjust to this new culture. And she was seeing a counselor, and the counselor told her, girl, you gotta get a hobby. Like, you gotta find something that makes you happy and just gives you something to do and be proud of. She tried crafting for a bit. She got into upcycling clothing because while she didn't love the process of crafting, she loved fashion and just like blinging out her clothes, which was the style in the early 2000s. And so I remember following her along on these trips to Joanne and like getting supplies so that she could fling out her clothes. So I remember just like observing my mom, even though she eventually sort of abandoned that kind of thing.
I love that.
I painted from a young age all the way throughout like high school before I got more into digital art and graphic design and UX design. I went to a Montessori school and we used to do a lot of little crafty activities. And one that really stood out to me was one where it was my first introduction to sewing, where they would take a shape, like two shapes, and they would hole punch it around the perimeter of the shape. And then you would sew it together with yarn. And then you would stuff the two pieces of paper with some sort of filling, and you would make a little plush toy to take home. And so when I later saw my mom sewing actual clothing, I was like, okay, this is nothing like this sewing that we were doing in preschool. In preschool, it was like all sew by numbers, and you just got to connect the holes with yarn. But then it looked a lot harder when I saw people trying to make real clothes. So I remember that made quite the impression on me.
Walk me through a little bit of the journey through high school and college of your life and how you ended up in design, and then that progression to discovering Novaloom.
At the very beginning, when I was younger in elementary school, I would attend these after school art classes where we would do art in our elementary school, and they would be short term projects that you would start and then end usually on the same day, and you had a finished product, and that was that. But what I realized as early as like fourth grade, what I was passionate about was making things that you could just keep building and building. So I remember I became obsessed with making stuff on Microsoft Paint when I was in early elementary school, and I started drawing clothing in Microsoft Paint, and then I finished that digital drawing. And then I wanted to make another one and another one. And then I organized them into folders and directories. And then I put price tags on them. And I just kept making the thing bigger and bigger. And then I would make my little sister buy the virtual clothes with fake money. And I just remember really liking just not stopping a project and just keep building it and building it. I think this came from like a sense of, I don't know, sometimes I would just find something so fun that I wouldn't want to stop it. So I usually didn't like things that you would have to really just do your best on in one and just get it right the first time. And then what you had was what you had. I really liked more iterative forms of creativity. I just liked putting something down and making it better and better. So I think that was an early discovery that I had about what sort of creativity I was interested in. Throughout school, I struggled with certain types of learning, just paying attention in school, and I would always turn in my assignments with like doodles on it. And I remember feeling very intimidated by the STEM subjects, and like I was more comfortable doing just artistic things. But as I got older, I wanted to do a lot more that I couldn't do with my design and art skill set, which is building apps and making things that people could use. I started to push myself, despite the fact that I didn't think that engineering or math came easily to me. I started to actively try to get better at those things just because I wanted my projects to be more elaborate is all. I wanted to build contraptions, and I remember I learned Arduino and I learned to program so I can make this machine that would, if you pressed a button, a bunch of motors would spin and a bunch of ropes would start pulling in opposite directions, which were clipped to blankets, and it would stretch across my bed and it would make my bed. And it worked, but it also just didn't actually. Let's just say I wouldn't be able to put it on a market, but it was just really fun building things like machines that made my bed. So I felt like I got more into those subjects because I just wanted to do more. I also remember when I first started becoming interested in fashion, which was when I wanted to start expressing myself more. Maybe when I was 9 or 10, I started getting pretty sick of the clothes that my mom would buy for me in Gymboree. I remember just sneaking over to my friend's house and watching Paris Hilton is my new BFF and seeing all the clothes there and wanting to integrate more with American culture and blend all just everything that I had going. I was very artistic and I loved to paint. So I wanted to sort of wear my own art and mix it all together. And so one day my friend, she introduced me to a show called Project Runway. And that felt like sort of the thing I was looking for, which was a way to express myself, but also continue making art. And it just seemed like the perfect intersection of all of those. And I was really fascinated with the whole process of seeing people put clothing together and turn raw materials into like actual clothing, which was a total mystery to me at that point. So I graduated high school just not really knowing what I wanted to do. I just didn't really know what my place was. I felt like the kids around me, because I went to a STEM-focused school, I felt like computer science was the thing to do. And I was one of the only people in my friend group that had this artistic inclination. And so I graduated high school feeling pretty confused about what direction I was going to go in. When I went to college, I just started taking like all sorts of classes and random departments. I took a lot of philosophy classes and a lot of design classes and computer science classes and political science classes and acting classes. And I picked up like a neural engineering minor, and I just wasn't exactly sure what I liked. And at that time, that didn't feel okay to me. But I think as college went on, I realized that being a generalist is something that a lot of people do. And it's very helpful when you want to do something like start a company. So I spent a lot of my college years just building a foundation without really knowing what I was building a foundation for. I just really liked to learn, and anything that I was interested in, I had a habit of just like reading the whole Wikipedia article from start to finish. But then I also like wouldn't attend class. And I would get really interested in subjects, but then struggle with the structure of school. And that's something that I experienced through from the time I was in first grade to the day I graduated college, which was struggling to fit in with the standard public education system and have a good relationship with teachers and homework assignments. And I was always not the best with the grades, but I really loved to learn. And so one thought that I just had after I graduated, I wanted to work on something that would improve the learning process or just improve the learning experience in some sort of way. I didn't know that I was going to be doing that with respect to sewing. I didn't get into sewing until later in college, but I knew that I wanted to do something about how difficult it can be to learn in ways that are available to most people.
So going back to something that you were talking about in regards to kind of early life. And when you were talking earlier on about your creativity, what really spoke to me was that you were finding your creative process. I think every person is creative, but people who are particularly inclined to creativity and art, I think we all have to find our identity in that. And what I was hearing from you was that you were really at an early age discovering what your creative process was, and that as you went through your life, that started to show up in different ways. And I think that's really amazing because you can reflect back on that and see that. But I'm not sure most people actually think about that as a child, as a younger person, finding that process.
Yeah, I think, again, I didn't think to myself when I was little, like, oh, I'm a systems thinker. I like projects that accumulate. And I didn't think that kind of thing, but I did know that I got burnt out of disposable work almost, or just one-off work. I liked things that built on each other, because to me, it makes it so much more satisfying to look back and see where you started and like how much you've improved that one thing and how much you've grown it. And it feels like concentrating all of your effort into one project that becomes better and better, or like more useful, or makes more and more of a difference, which is so much more rewarding to me. I think that's part of why I had so much trouble doing homework assignments, but I went so hard on projects. Mm-hmm. Like with homework assignments, you'd get fake problems that would simulate some issue that you might face in the real world, but they were typically very contrived. It was all just fake. You had to do it as an exercise, and then you would submit the assignment, it would get graded, it would go in the trash. That's it. Like I did fix that attitude a little bit later in life. The longer term the work was, and the more cumulative it was, there was a project or something just big, like a whole year project, that would excite me. I think it, again, relates back to like how I hated making Lego projects and then pulling them apart. I liked to see progress, and I liked to build a world almost. I just liked things that built on each other.
As you were sharing, it's interesting because I feel like I'm listening to myself talk. I've definitely had that sense, and just like my research of you, is that we're here to do unique, big things, and our brains work in a way that doesn't make sense in established systems, and we're here to disrupt those systems. And technology is a big way that we do that.
I think one thing that has changed about my thinking growing up was that I almost positioned myself against some of my peers. I always had a bit of a, not combative, but a bit of a me versus them relationship with people of just different personality types and learning styles. I think I was like, oh, they'll never understand me. I'm just so misunderstood, and these are not my people. But I think, and that's the mindset that I had starting in elementary school, throughout middle school while I was still in this program, and throughout my time at this STEM-focused high school, where I was like, people are different from me. I'm a different sort of person. We don't get along. All the way back from when I started my human-centered design program in college, I realized that first my soft skills needed a lot of work. But then when I actually started trying to create a company that actually made something that I wanted to put out into the world and make a difference, then I started thinking more practically. And I thought, okay, yes, I'm creative and work differently and maybe misunderstood, but I have to make myself understood, because all these other different personalities that I'd found very like restrictive and unpleasant growing up are actually personalities that complement me when we work as a team. I initially started with just like finding people that were just like me, and because I thought, oh, we're like-minded, just creative and chaotic. But I realized that good teams come from complementary skill sets and personalities, and so that people can keep each other on track. So I changed my mindset from more of a like oppositional one to a more collaborative one over the years, pretty recently.
Yeah.
So that's been an interesting change.
I think entrepreneurship really lends itself well to people whose brains think this way, who really want to change and build and create impact. So you're becoming a experienced, evolved, expanded person through not just your formative years and through school. That is for everyone, yeah. Right? But then through your business and your pursuits, which I love hearing it. I think probably a lot of people can resonate with this, but It's exciting because you can look back now and say, oh, wow, look what's happened over the last few years. But 10 years from now,
yeah,
you won't even recognize the person.
Well, I guess in my experience, a lot of this change happens in myself. Like, I can see how my worldview is changing, but it's hard for me to see how that change reflects in my personality and like how I act outwardly. Other people notice it. If they haven't seen me for 5 years, they're like, whoa, you're different. I think right now when I hear people say that I've changed, I feel immense joy because I really didn't like who I was earlier. But then maybe down the line, I'll realize something like, back then I was fine too. It's just that my view of myself was through the lens of teachers or people who just didn't respect me or value me as a person. I think choosing who you spend your time around is really important, because at least for me, a lot of my self-evaluation or like sense of self-worth for a while, maybe still, comes a lot from what the people around me seemingly think of me. So I think just for a while, because people around me thought that I was like lazy or something like that, I thought that of myself, even though I really never was. It's just that maybe teachers thought that of me because they didn't see what kinds of stuff I would get up to after school or throughout high school. The environment that I was in, which was pretty rigorous, cutthroat, competitive, very like STEM-minded people, I think there was a pretty open culture of hating on art and artists. So I remember I stopped painting much after early high school because I think just the kids around me were of the, oh, art is useless, because you just couldn't get a score on art and there's no way to fail at it. That they're like, okay, because you can't fail at it, it's like a baby hobby. If you're playing basketball or tennis, like you can lose and there's stakes. When you're making art, that's just like for soft souled people. Even to this day, I still keep in touch with my high school friends because some of them are pretty fun. But there was a argument about the value of art to society. And I think I realized that these discussions were pretty much the same discussions that I spent my time listening to in high school. But now I realize that I just spent my time in a bubble. So that's why I became so self-conscious of being a more creative-minded person. It's because I spent my time around not creative people. So I think when people say that, oh my God, I had no idea that you had it in you to build an app or write this much code, or like whenever people just seem shocked at my geekiness, I feel joy. And then when people compliment my art or just they think what I made looks really nice, I'm just like, whatever. If someone compliments just something that I've historically felt inadequate, I feel great. But I think like maybe down the line, I'll reflect back on this and just see it from a completely different perspective. But I think just because things are still changing, I haven't really had time to really reflect on this relationship with myself.
I'm so excited for what you're doing. Like, it's so badass. And it's very funny because my husband, David, is the one that came across your work. And he was like rapidly like messaging me one night. And he was like, you got to check them out. I think you're really going to love talking with them. I think you're really going to love what they're doing. And he's right. I want to dive into more of what you're building.
My transition to product development and user-centered design and creating a company and a product, to me, feels like an act of self-love. And instead of seeing someone who's struggling with sewing as someone who's just like a failure, and it made me think more along the lines of, no, maybe the sewing patterns need to be easier to read. And maybe something can be done about how easy it is to sew the wrong pieces together. Maybe the activity can be better, especially with something like making. I think a lot of people want to get into making to relieve mental stress, like how my mom's counselor suggested crafting to my mom as a hobby to find to make her feel less lonely during the winters in America with no family around as a 21-year-old. If you're getting into a craft as a form of self-care and wellness, like it should at the minimum be easy-ish to break into, and you shouldn't feel like a failure or judged if you can't pick it up right away. And for sewing, I felt that way. I felt like almost mocked by these sewing patterns. I'm like, wait, so this is what they have to offer? Difficult to read sewing patterns that are hard to trace. They don't even come in my size, so that's great too. Just same standard sizing as you see on the racks. I just started to think more about making products and experiences
better. Yeah, I love what you said about building something that wasn't trying to make people change who they are or like to fit in a specific mold or box. I think that's the most amazing thing about technology today is our ability to customize, to personalize, to create experiences, or actually not even to create experiences, to create platforms, to create apps, to create software that allows for personalization, that allows for customization. Building tools for people is, I think, the coolest thing you can do, because it's really what empowers them as opposed to just giving them something.
When I first started Novaloom, I didn't think I was going to build a tool at all. I started out just wanting to make clothes for me that fit. And I was like, I'll just make a fashion line for myself and it'll have my art on it and it'll fit me. And it'll just be like the perfect thing for me. So I started doing that. It started out as, again, one of those sorts of things that didn't feel like it had reusable components. It just was like, okay, I'm done with this outfit. Now time to start all over again and draft another pattern for another outfit that fits me. And as soon as some of my friends that I really loved said something along the lines of, whoa, I love your outfit. That's so cool. Can I have one? But, you know, they're a completely different size from me, different height, different just everything. And I really wanted to see them in the outfit. I also really do want to make each outfit that I make easier to make than the last time instead of having to go back to the whiteboard every time I'm done, because I find that very annoying. I felt that there is a lot of that whole sense of starting all over again. And that's where my interest in automation came from. My creative sensibility is very sensitive, in the sense that if I have to do a part that's just really tedious, using my measurements to by hand draft a pattern, and if I screw something up, I have to erase it or toss it out and start again. And I'm very sensitive to that. If I feel like there's a tedious part, I get burnt out easily. I was very interested in things that almost seem to make these tedious parts disappear like magic. Like, I guess in Illustrator, I was just used to being able to like control Z things instead of having to erase. And I think more recently with Canva and TikTok, they give you a lot of like suggestions. If you're making a TikTok, it lets you just sync things up with the music if you don't feel like doing it. But if you really want to be a perfectionist about that and add your own stuff, then you can definitely sync it on your own. But I like a lot of these tools that are there to help you out if you start to get a little tired, to help you finish that TikTok or that, in case of Canva, that design up. And so I really wanted to create tools because tools help creators and help put more interesting content out there. And just being a creative myself and creating things for myself wasn't necessarily doing much to help other people. Yeah, that's where I transitioned from wanting to make more static designs to just like full-on apps that actually worked.
We are officially closing Making's print magazine chapter with our biggest sale yet. For a limited time only, enjoy a huge discount on all of our beautifully inspiring magazines and books. This will be your last chance to purchase back issues from us, and this sale won't last forever. Head to makingzine.com and enter the code MAKINGSALE at checkout for 60% off all sale items. Again, that's makingzine.com, and the code is MAKINGSALE. Enter that at checkout for 60% off all sale items. Happy shopping.
Tell me what Novaloom is. Why don't you start from the beginning and explain what it is, how it works, and what your mission is.
Broadly, Novaloom is a custom fashion platform, and our broad mission is to help anyone wear whatever they want. Of course, there's a order of doing things and a roadmap and everything. So you can go to the site, and we have a couple of different types of starter garments that you can customize. So we have things from slip dresses to bucket hats, and you can pick that basic template to start with and start customizing it. You can turn an outfit into an outfit that fits you in one click and enter in your own measurements if you deviate from standard sizing. And then you can pick what materials you want that outfit to be and what trims go on it and upload a custom print. And you can really digitally design your own outfit online. And then after you're done with that digital design, you can order it. And we give it to you in the form of a sew by numbers kit. So like meal kits, how you get all the ingredients in a box and instructions on how to make it. And you can make it and it's pretty easy. Wastes fewer ingredients than if you were one person trying to get all the ingredients for a recipe at home. Our kits give you exactly the materials that you would need to make it with the markings printed on it. And we give you instructions on how to sew it yourself, either completely by hand or with a machine. And in the future, we plan to create some sort of platform that connects you with somebody that can make the outfit for you if you choose to do so. So that's way further in the future. Right now, we're starting with pretty simple kits that are not super sensitive to sizing. So just scrunchie kits, bucket hat kits. And we're trying to add more and more customization features to those so that you can make it whatever material you want and really improve the experience of creating something small. But we are testing much larger size-sensitive garments like slip dresses and fitted bodices. Sew by numbers is a concept that's probably been sitting in my head for a while, ever since preschool, and we had those hole-punched paper plush kits where you just had to weave the yarn through the punched holes and you would just make something and it was super easy. I really wanted to make it easy for people to sew even slippery, complicated fabrics together just by making sure that the matching dots line up and turn it into almost, I describe it as connecting the dots with thread or like Legos, but for making clothes. And I wanted to turn it into almost a fun experience, a relaxing meditative experience, so that people feel like they can actually take on the task of making themselves a fully custom outfit.
So where do you want to take this next? What is your hope and dreams for the next couple of years?
Right now, we have a 2D editor where you can enter in your own measurements, upload your own prints, and do some basic customizations. But currently, I mainly use that tool as an internal tool, just because I don't think in terms of user experience, it's something that would go mainstream. I think people don't see 2D cutouts of clothes and have the ability to immediately simulate what that's going to look like as a sewn up garment. And I think that in the future, we really want to focus on the whole experience of making an outfit online and then looking at it and just really seeing what it's going to look like in real life and feeling confident that what you've just created digitally is actually going to look the way that you think it's going to look in real life. So really improving that sense of fidelity. And that's going to come from adding a sculpting tool that we're working on where you can just sculpt the outfit of your dreams in a 3D editor by just dragging and dropping your mouse to pinch or bloat or shape the outfit as you please. And then we take care of the rest with a garment compiler that I've been working on for the last couple of years. So we really just want to make it just zero effort for you to just go to our website and make whatever outfit that you want. And we figure out how it breaks down into a bunch of pieces and what inner pieces need to be added in. It just like truly people can treat us like a 3D printer for clothing. They can design their dream outfit online and expect that it'll show up in kit form the way that they envisioned it. I went to New York Fashion Week recently and I helped out at some of the shows and I got to hear a little bit about the whole process from ideation to prototyping to drafting the patterns and fitting them on the models. And it occurred to me that there's very few people at these fashion houses that actually get to do the fun stuff. There's very few people that get to make the design decisions, because to make one fashion collection requires such a team of people, because there's technical skill that goes into having to make sure that a pattern is actually going to look good. A lot of just math and adjustments, and maybe even like a decent intuitive understanding of like physics and how an outfit is going to drape and fall. And then there's a few people that have the technical skills to actually sew the garments together. And I think because all of these different steps that go into creating a garment, it requires so much specialized skill and experience. It creates this necessary hierarchy and dependence on the people at the top in fashion. There's only a couple of people that get to have their creative ideas out there on the runway. Even fewer people that actually get to see their outfits produced and on the market and available for someone else to buy. There's a lot of creative ideas out there, but there's like a huge bottleneck that stops all these ideas from actually being seen. But with a tool like Novaloom, where a lot of the technical steps are automated in the form of a clothing compiler, and a lot of these like steps that are basically algorithms but in practice just require a lot of erasing and drawing with a pencil, I think once that's actually turned into something that someone can sit down in a day and actually just easily draft their own idea, I think that the world of fashion will be a lot more democratic. I would compare it to TikTok again. I mean, one can argue about like the pros and cons of TikTok on society, but you can't argue with the fact that people with ideas can get their ideas out faster because they have a nice tool on their phone to express themselves, compared to what's the video editing tool, like Adobe Premiere Pro, which is incredibly dense and there's buttons everywhere and you can't use it on your phone in comparison. Because TikTok has democratized video creation, like there's just a lot of stuff out there you can collaborate with just about anyone, because you can expect anyone to be able to access this tool. And I think similarly, if we become that easy accessible in your phone, in your browser fashion creation tool, I think that opens up a lot of opportunity in just the world of fashion to create things that would never make the cut at a fashion house, and just a lot more art in the form of fashion out there, and a lot more ideas, and a lot more people wearing things that actually express who they are. So I think that's missing in fashion right now, and I think that's what we can bring by making the whole pipeline from design to manufacturing easy and something that you can do on your personal computer or on your phone. And then even the manufacturing can be done by just anybody using sew by numbers.
It's exciting. Yeah. I think like now is the time more than ever. I think there's a desire to disrupt fast fashion, but I also think that for the first time ever, there's generations of people that really want something different. They want an alternative. And so it's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm really excited about just young people right now, and the desire to almost open things up and modify them and upcycle them. I think before, with maybe people a little bit older than me, I saw less of that. I notice with people younger than me that they're just so like radically accepting and like inclusive, and they really just want to collaborate with other people creatively, like a lot of like mashups and remixes and blending together stuff that people would have previously said, no, that does not belong together. I see a lot of just like interesting eclectic art, from like memes to music to even fashion.
Making. This is why we're doing what we're doing now, as opposed to 7 years ago when I first had this idea for this app, because it just wasn't time. And makers were generally boomers, Gen X, and there wasn't a demand or like a drive for something different. And now there is. I get super stoked. And I love TikTok for the very reason that not just the ease of people getting their ideas out there, but you get a tap on the zeitgeist, like in a way that you just don't anywhere else. It feels like you're seeing just so many different types of people and things. And I was trying to think the other day, what makes it so different than, say, YouTube? But I think obviously there's a lot of reasons, but I think that there's just something about short form video that really TikTok was able to capture more than YouTube. If you had a message for the world, what would it be?
What I want to tell people is something along the lines of what I thought to myself earlier, which is if you feel like you're maybe a little bit different from the average person or from the norm, whether it comes to maybe the way you look, your size, your shape, the way your brain works, your personality, I think that you should not necessarily come to the conclusion that you need to fix yourself or completely change yourself to become average or fit the mold. The things that you perceive in yourself as flaws or defects or things that need to be fixed or improved, they may actually be the most interesting parts of yourself and the parts of yourself that have the potential to make the greatest difference because they're what make you stand out. I hope that this trend of people embracing the unique or interesting or just unusual parts of themselves continues. And I hope that people go even further in putting it out there and expressing themselves, whether that's through making your own things that really have your own personality and individuality inserted into it, or whether it's just through just getting out there and being yourself.
To join the amazing community of makers in the Making App, head to themakingapp.com to download and sign up, or head to your favorite app store and search Making. You can listen to the Making Conversation podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Of course, we'd love for you to subscribe and share with your friends. But also, did you know that you can listen to the Making Conversation podcast in the Making app? Open up the Making app and click Discover. Scroll down to podcasts and you'll see all current and past podcasts listed there. You can listen while you scroll the feed, post details in a project, search through the marketplace, or even just have it out while you're working on your favorite whip. If you've made it this far and you're interested in sponsoring Making Conversation, send us a note at hq@makingco.com and we'll be in touch. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the Making app.